really have to know yourself spiritually to deal with a world that's basically hostile.
Shut the fuck up. I hate you all and you deserve it. Acting! Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 18, Another Perfect Day in Hell. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Was expecting to get called a demon. Hello, Sarah.
I was thinking about it. I was honestly thinking imps. I was going to go with imps.
I feel like he was trying and it didn't quite happen.
Imps is cute.
It is.
Hi.
Hello. Speaking of hellacious things, again with this episode 39. Just kidding. It'll be great. It's dropping March 19th. We are reading the September 1983 issue of Apostrophe Teen magazine, featuring cover girl Heather Locklear. We'll also be discussing some fashions in the magazine, some scaremongering by the editors about the deleterious effects of television, and John Stamos, because he's there and why not?
Stamos!
Please join us.
Stamos!
Please join us at patreon.com/againwiththis. We have a good time with this stuff. We'd love you to join us. We'll see you there.
Yeah. This one is going to go places that we did not expect at all. it took a sharp left when I was going through it. And that's all I'll say. But except to also add, we couldn't do the main podcast if not for the support of our Patreon. So we really, really do appreciate everyone who joins us. So if you do have a couple of bucks, honestly, any level of support gets you all of our bonus episodes. And it's one a week minimum. Plus, if you join at the $5 level, the completely insane once monthly Again With Them about Jenny and Tori's podcast as well. So, you know, review your finances, see if you have that to throw our way, because we really do appreciate it. And as Sarah said, we have fun.
I mean, what better way to spend $5 of your stimulus money than on this?
I honestly ask you. Do not know. All right, let's get into this episode, starting with our C plot. Can Kimberly skate on a psyche val at work? Spoiler, no. But let's let's get into the details anyway. Michael rolls in late to a meeting at the hospital to learn that in light of recent events, Kimberly and Peter unsaid, everyone on staff is going to undergo a psych evaluation, which Matt will coordinate, which is nice. Gives him something to do that will make him even more popular. Cough.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. I mean, is now the right place to talk about the fact that Peter and Chris are, like, obviously off in Elko together gambling?
Yeah. I mean, except one of them is coming back. Like,
yeah, but... I mean, I don't know, like the way that these departures are accomplished on this show is just very strange to me. It's like these characters are put in a charger and everyone on the show understands that, but mm-hmm. We're never told.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially in, I just wonder if there was some kind of, you know, contract negotiation going on with Wagner, because normally when a character gets arrested, like, you see them in holding. You see someone go visit them. I mean, granted, he hasn't been here long enough for anyone to visit him. Obviously, Amanda's not going to go say hi unless it's to gloat, but she's got her own shit going on, which we'll get to. But yeah, it's. I assume he was just like making a TV movie or something, and that's why they had to get him off screen. But it is strange that it's just like, oh, yeah, he's been arrested, and that's it until we see him again.
I mean, I think it is probably some kind of contract negotiation where it's like, can we pay for this guy? Like, while we figure that out, we can't pay this guy, so we're just going to Chris him.
Right.
And for you listeners who are wondering to yourselves, is Sarah ever going to let this Chris thing drop? She is not. Occasionally, it's just going to come up that I'm going to be like, cut to Chris. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just funny to me that he like ran out of the casino, like into the desert or something. And that's it. But back to another crazy person.
Indeed. Kimberly immediately objects to this plan on the basis that Matt is unqualified for such a sensitive assignment, calling him a gopher for indigence. Rude. So
wow.
Matt shoots back his credentials, which include 2 master's degrees in relevant fields. Boom, social worked. The doctor running the meeting says that Kimberly's question displays as much arrogance as Peter did before he, you know, got all arrested and shit. So that shuts her up. And in the on-call room the next day, Kimberly is still ranting to Michael about the psych eval because, you know, she's not going to pass it. Not that she says that, although we all know, including Michael, because he says this. Clip 2.
If you were mad at your husband, would you A, confront him, B, cheat on him, or C, dress up as someone else and run him over? Maybe we better skip that one.
That is not in the least bit funny.
I don't know. I think I'm a riot. I'll see you around the ink blot.
I mean, it takes a particular breed of villain to fuck with Kimberly in this way and just be completely like blithe about it. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I laughed.
He's delightful.
And her seething glares in this episode. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Marcia Cross setting things on fire with her mind. It's so good.
Yep. Agree. So then Kimberly puts on a conciliatory tone some number of days later to come and see Matt in his office. He is wary, and rightly so, as she tries to butter him up before asking if she can just, you know, not schedule a test. Clip 3.
It's just that I'm feeling edgy these days, and I'm afraid it might be misinterpreted. Anyway, it's so hard for women in professions, always judged more harshly. All I need you to do is just lose my name off the list, that's all.
It's a gender-neutral test, and actually, I'm just coordinating it, so I can't lose your name off anything now. Your test is at 2 p.m., if I were you, I'd be there.
You listen to me, you cipher. Your protector, Dr. Burns, is gone, so I'll be back on the social service board any day now, which means I can make your life a living hell.
Your threats don't work with me, Kimberly. You should know that by now.
Oh, I am much more than threats, little one. You should know that by now.
And then they kissed.
Yeah.
Guitar. Take a beat. Think twice. Oh.
Yeah. It's rough. The way she just turns on a dime is very funny. I mean, she has so much fun with all of her scene partners. It's a joy to watch her, truly.
It really is. Also, little one.
Yeah.
It's such a weird thing to call him, but then it's so Kimberly, it's perfect.
Yeah.
I feel I did not properly appreciate the work of the great Marcia Cross the first time around. So it really has been a joy to revisit what an utter dastardly pro she is.
Yep. I agree. So after the test happens, Matt also has to be the one to tell Kimberly how it went, which is not well. Clip 4.
Well, Kimberly, you didn't test very positively. There's nothing in the results, though, that couldn't be handled and dealt with in some, you know, intense counseling sessions.
What?
You have no mechanism for dealing with stress, a high degree of suppressed hostility, sociopathic tendencies, dissociative personality disorder. In short, you're walking time bomb. Now, I can refer you to a staff psychotherapist.
That would be bad for my career, Matt. I want you to change the results.
You know, that's impossible.
I know it's not. Hell, you've changed blood test results before, Matt. What's the diff?
Look, I'm not changing anything, okay? The results go in tomorrow morning as scheduled. Now, if you could just initial your evaluation and sign at the bottom.
I guess I'll just have to think about that, won't I?
No, Just do. I mean, here's the thing. I feel like she could get the whole thing thrown out as inaccurate on the grounds that her hostility is not suppressed even a little.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, I don't think that, I mean, this would be bad for my career, sure, but I don't think you can get fired for results like this. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. But it seems like if he's like, you could get intensive counseling.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just one of those things. It's like the military where people or like cops on TV. We're like, right. I'm not going to no head shrinker. Like, okay.
Sure.
Do you want to keep your job? Then get shrinking.
We're also trying to apply human logic to the actions of Kimberly Shaw. That's probably mistake number one.
Yeah. Also, it's a soap. I'm not sure how we keep ending up in these like OSHA eddies where it's like, well, actually, like, right. Who cares? Sorry, everybody. We're back.
Why doesn't she just get an employment? Okay, never mind. Forget it. Anyway, so she leaves. And Matt's face hilariously indicates that he did not hate that interaction. And you can see that in the visual aids that he's like, oh, that was all right.
Mm.
However, what he likes a lot less is walking home with a bag of groceries and getting attacked by three guys who call him queer bait and leave him bleeding from the mouth on the sidewalk. Eesh. So the next day, he is shirtless in a hospital bed, getting questioned by a detective and irritated by the implication that he may have known or provoked his assailants. And we hear that exchange in clip 5.
So I know you cops don't believe this, but this stuff happens all the time.
Yeah, we have records of this happening to you before, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, you know, you come down here and you do the same dance. You don't, you take a report and you don't do anything.
Look, Matt, won't you calm down, okay? I'm quite aware of the number of gay hate crimes, especially in your neighborhood. I'm gay.
Oh. That's good.
Yeah, it is. So don't worry. I'm going to do whatever I can to find out who did this to you.
Thanks.
Sure. You take care, and I'll be in touch.
So
good. Yeah, it is. What? I mean, yeah. It isn't. This is about to turn into unlawful entry, but whatever.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the underplaying, like, I'm gay. Oh. It's just a very good reacting. I enjoyed that. Yeah. So when Matt wakes up later, Kimberly is sitting on the edge of his bed looking creepy, which you can also see in the visual aids, and being creepy in clip 6.
Broken ribs. I'm surprised. I told them to break your arm.
Well, don't try and take credit for this. You had nothing to do with this. It was a hate crime.
You bet your butt it was. I hate you.
I mean... These two are amazing.
Yeah. I'm not sure why he doesn't believe initially that she would be behind it. Like, you know her record. You're aware of her work. You've seen her resume. Like, the last thing she did was steal a baby after faking a woman's stillborn child's death certificate. Like, what won't this broad do? Honestly.
Yeah.
Come
but
on,
I also love that he may just be saying that in order to annoy her. Like, these two are, you'd think Matt would be overmatched, but we're seeing some balls of steel here that I'm impressed by.
Yeah. Putting these two together in a storyline is a good choice. And
yeah, agree.
Happy to see more of it. But for now, we have to move to our B plot. Billy is concerned about Amanda. And hit on by Meredith.
Oh, God. Okay.
So, at D&D, Amanda's finally actually starting to look run down and gathers her strength before walking into a meeting, although that may just be because Allison is there, which, relatable. She has nothing but bad news about the agency, which boils down to everyone's going to have to double their workload to keep the clients they have and bring in new ones, and Allison tries to business but it doesn't go well in clip 7.
Amanda, with the money we save from canceling the charity ball, we can put together intensified individual campaigns for more valuable clients.
That is exactly the wrong approach. The charity ball will go on as planned Wednesday night. No clients, present or prospective, can feel that we are weakened in any way. I'll expect everyone to be there. We're going to prove to everyone that D&D is still a force to be reckoned with. Allison, I want you and Billy to go over the guest list, RSVPs checked and double-checked with personal calls. Everyone else, take your client files, learn them by heart. I want these guests to feel that you know everything about them. That's it.
You okay? You look tired.
Thanks for the compliment. You look like hell, too. Now, why don't you get to work?
Alrighty. I mean, look, clients might be a little concerned to learn that account executives and copywriters are doing, like, marketing and party planning.
Well,
I don't think that's a great use of their time, but what do I know?
Well, true. I think the money that you save canceling a ball that is planned for like less than a week from now is going to be minimal. Like you've already paid for all this shit. Like you kind of have to do it.
Right. Oh no. Like Allison is a moron and like stipulated. I'm not defending Allison. I'm just saying, I don't think putting her and Billy to work on that, which they're not. That's not their job.
No,
and also, they suck. So why would you give them that to do if it's important? But
right. I mean, last time there was a big D&D party, as I recall, Allison ended up in a brawl in the makeshift kitchen. So, you know, maybe don't invite her. That would be my advice. I mean, I know that was before she was sober, but still, just to be safe.
Yeah.
Anywho. Later, the bullpen is eerily quiet, what with all the people who have been laid off or quit. Billy thinks it's time to start padding the old resume, which it's going to look like Shackleton's sleeping bag when he's done. But then Allison announces that she wants to make amends to him. He tries to get out of receiving them. Sorry, Sarah was sipping a drink when I made that sleeping bag remark. Oh, no.
Oh, I did it. Oh, Jesus. That was my own fault. Oh, Shackleton sleeping bag. That's good shit. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Billy tries to get out of receiving Allison's amends, but she says it's an important part of her recovery. And so this happens. Clip 8.
I am genuinely sorry for all the pain I've caused you in the past. And I am forever grateful to you for getting me into a sobriety program. Also, I think you should know that I'll always be your friend. I'll always love you.
I'm your friend too.
Wow. Also, the phrasing of that, like, I just want to warn you that I'll always love you. Like, okay. We're on a soap. It's economy of characters. I figured, but oh man, that response.
Yeah.
How much of that is like just Andrew Hsu being a bad actor and how much of it was him being a good actor?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep, I do. My notes have like, that was actually sincere and nice because I didn't notice until I cut the clip, the part where she said, I'll always love you and I'm your friend. And the long pause before his response of like, and I reciprocate with precisely half of your sentiment. Anyway, that unpleasant job done, Allison briskly says she's putting the past behind her again for like the 500th time since we met her. This bitch loves to get in front of the past. But Billy looks up and says that might not be so easy because her sister Meredith is there. She is in town for a librarian conference. I don't think we ever knew what her job was before, so now we do. Okay. She feels bad about how she acted in Wisconsin. Allison says it's okay. Everything turned out fine. Did it? Yeah. I'm not sure it did, but okay.
Well, I mean, it took a while, but sure.
I mean, it turned out. you know, that's one of the things that is in Allison's past that she's in front of now. Anyway,
I guess
she seems to mean it and agrees to meet up with Meredith for dinner later. But as Meredith leaves, Allison chews her lips in the classic Allison worry face. So we rejoin the Parker sisters as apparently Meredith has just finished apologizing again because Allison is warmly telling her everything is fine and they should both just be looking toward the future. Meredith is proud of the way that Allison has taken charge of her life, though she wishes that Allison and Billy had stayed together. Clip 9.
You guys were such a great couple, and he was so supportive.
What?
Yeah. I mean, they haven't been in contact, I guess, so Meredith does not know how untrue that is. Maybe let's give her that excuse.
Yeah, I mean, and granted, he did get her into a rehab.
Yeah.
But, like, supportive of, I don't know, like, no. Just stop bringing that up and we'll stop correcting it. How about right. that?
Yes.
It's Billy.
It's Billy. So Allison changes the subject to whether there are any new men in Meredith's life, but there are none. And then Meredith drops a bombshell with regard to that. Clip 10.
I have never had a real relationship because I have never actually been able I've never been able to do anything with a man. Dad ruined all that for me.
Oh, Meredith, I had no idea.
I mean, I don't want to live in the past. You know, I'd like to be sexy and desirable, but I just have kept it locked up inside so long, you know, I don't even think I know how. God, I sound pathetic, don't I?
No, it doesn't sound that way at all. You need some confidence. Maybe some new clothes would help.
You think so, huh? Well, I guess I do kind of dress like a librarian.
Okay. First of all, wait a few years. Librarian's going to be a very hot aesthetic. That's A.
It is. Also, she dresses perfectly cute.
She
it's
does.
Fine.
She dresses like everyone else in the 90s. B, yep. This is not the issue that a makeover is going to solve.
No.
So bad advice from Allison, who's just spent a month essentially therapy.
Like, yeah, oh, Jesus. And Allison is the one who's going to, like, launch you into a sort of more confident and healthy romantic life?
Right.
Her? Like,
does Meredith even know about the one-day engagement that Allison just broke off in?
Yeah, did she not see Allison on the TV?
Yeah.
With Jag?
I mean,
in her wheat-colored jeans? Allison dresses like a librarian.
True. Very true. Anyway, Allison then suggests that Meredith ditch her hotel and come and stay with her instead, which, like, no, don't do that. If you're being put up in a hotel, stay in a hotel. Allison should come and stay with you in your hotel, in fact.
Yeah. Get room service. Watch Law and Order.
Yeah. The next day, Amanda seems to be struggling in a meeting with the Glorious Gowns client, a Mr. McGovern, getting facts wrong that the useless Allison and Billy, also present, do not correct her on, forcing the already irritated client to do it. Billy then glares at Allison for some reason as she takes over. Clip 11.
You are completely accurate, Mr. McGovern, and sales have leveled off at a 7% increase because we did not follow our plunge campaign with a new aggressive approach. Now, accepting that a 7% increase in sales is a positive, let's try to do even better. Billy and I were talking about our upcoming charity ball and how, when we were children, the idea of a ball was so magical. Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella. But turn the fairy tale upside down, where the princess is not only elegant, but powerful. This 90s princess, dressed in a number of your gowns, this is maybe a four-page spread, is not only dancing with the prince, she's hauling off and slugging the wicked stepsisters, knocking them on their cans.
Of course, these are all very rough ideas. We'll work on them and get back to you.
You've got some great people working for you, Ms. Woodward.
No, but what matters is that we have great clients. We'll keep in touch.
Thank you.
Thank you. Don't you ever interrupt and hijack a pitch from me again. I was trying to help. Now, what you were doing was undermining my authority. I'm holding this company together. So you either support me or you can get out. Now, I told you to work on the invitations. Unless you want to argue with me about that, too, get to it.
I mean, what can you say?
Yeah, I mean, Allison was right. But, you know, she's also Allison. So it's hard to take her side.
Well, yeah. And also, that campaign sounds terrible. And also knock them on their cans.
Yeah.
You never get me, stepsister. You never get me, see?
Yeah. So after Allison has left, Billy stays and asks Amanda what her problem is. She says she just has a headache and Allison will get over it. Billy asks her to see a doctor since she's obviously not feeling well, but Amanda snaps that she just needs aspirin and he needs to mind his own business. And then it's the ball. Amanda's decided to get on board with Allison's glorious gowns pitch and is promising the client that it'll be ready for him soon. And he tells her she should also give Allison a raise, and Amanda's like, totally. He's never going to know. Jane is also there with Allison and Meredith, and Meredith's in a hot red strapless gown, very pretty woman Vivian at the opera, but like super short. She looks great. And Jane is bitter that Kimberly and Michael are there. Allison reminds Jane and the rest of us that Michael and Kimberly are also partners in Jane's dumb company. So all three of them are there for the same stupid reason, which I like. When I saw them there, I was like, why are any of them there? Oh, right. God. Anyway, then Billy goes over to Michael to ask him to examine Amanda, basically, given how run down she has seemed lately. And Michael has just agreed and taken off when Meredith comes over to ask what Billy thinks of her new look. And put on the spot, Billy notices it, apparently for the first time, and half-assedly says it's wonderful. And Meredith goes on, clip 12.
Allison told me that I should be more outgoing with the guys, but I couldn't. I thought I should try it out on someone I know first. Do you want to dance?
Sure.
This is actually the perfect person to put in Meredith's sights.
Yes.
Because he can't, I mean, because he can't act, it's perfect.
Yes. Agree. It's very funny. So at the bar, Kimberly watches and seethes while Michael approaches Amanda, puts his hands on her neck, and tells her she looks exhausted. She tries to get his hands off her, but he wants to know how long she's had the lump that he feels. She tells him it's just a swollen gland and steers him onto the dance floor, where Meredith is making her move, weirdly, in clip 13.
I've been impressed for so long, you know. I've been keeping everything locked up, but afraid of my own sexuality. Allison's been encouraging me. She's told me that these things have to change.
Well, I'm glad you're working on it.
Oh, I am. I am.
It's so cringy.
Oh, God. Yeah.
She really goes for it, though, Tracy Nelson. Like, she's...
She does. She's good here.
She's committed. Back to Michael and Amanda, the latter of whom is getting annoyed by his questions and tells him if she wanted a doctor, she would see one. And as she storms off, Kimberly rages up to them and hisses at him to stop treating her like this. And Kimberly's about to hit Michael in the middle of the dance floor when he just catches her wrist to stop her, which is a pretty cool move, and goes after Amanda instead. Just in time for Amanda to start yelling at him again and then pass out mid-sentence. So the next day, Amanda's at the hospital letting Michael draw blood and reporting that she slept fine after the ball. Sleeping's all she wants to do, in fact. He hopes it's exhaustion or maybe anemia, but he will let her know what the tests say. And for now, he recommends time off, but she can't afford it with D&D in its current state. Over to the complex, where Billy lets himself back into his apartment and is down to his boxers on his way to the shower when he finds Meredith in his bed, purring that she's glad he leaves his door open when he goes jogging. And again, she's weird. Clip 14.
I'm naked under here. You want to join me?
Meredith, this is a really bad idea.
Why? We're both adults. Who can it hurt?
Billy! Billy, you home?
Oh, great, great. Where are your clothes? Get out of here. Get dressed.
Stop it. You're hurting me.
Last night. So if we just do some follow-up. What? You've got to be the lowest animal on the face of the earth.
Oh, come on. Come on. You don't really
believe Susan was
it.
One thing, but my own sister.
What is this, some kind of setup? I mean, your sister's twisted or something. I came back from a run. She's in my bed.
I don't think so. I know Meredith. Obviously a hell of a lot better than I know you.
Well, I don't care if you believe me or not. You two are nuts. I mean, hell, I don't even like your sister, much less want to sleep with her.
God. You don't even know the damage you do you?
I don't know. I thought he did fine. I mean, the whole thing is so bonkers. You feel for Meredith, but also it's Allison. And the fact that she, dunders in there is like, of course, here comes Eeyore. And then he's like, how great. Like,
yeah.
My sentiments exactly, buddy.
Totally.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really just a flawlessly staged soap misunderstanding scene.
Yeah.
I mean, the part where he's like, I don't even like her is like just classic Billy, because he's just trying to get out of this moment. He's not even thinking through like how that's going to make her feel.
Right. And because, then they're both like, hey, and he's like, just why don't you just tell me the thing I'm supposed to say?
Yeah.
Ooh. Unbelievable.
But later, a tearful Meredith seems to be confessing to Allison that she came on to a blameless Billy because she's always been jealous of Allison's relationship with him, you know, since she found out about it at the start of the season and spent one day with them. He's just so sweet and gorgeous. It's Billy. It's Billy.
It's Billy. Still Billy.
Billy. Allison Billy. Says that when Meredith gets back to San Francisco, she needs to get into therapy. Yeah, thank you. It's the first thing you should have said. Wow. But whatever. Better late than never. Meredith agrees, apologizing again and hoping Billy doesn't hate her. Like, I don't think he anything's you, lady, but sure. And Allison promises he's really mad at her and that the two of them are going to be okay too, which, sure. Up to Amanda's place, where she's trying to work despite apparently being wrecked with exhaustion, like beyond belief. Michael comes to the door with the preliminary results from her blood tests. She thinks that she'll just need a prescription. He tries to get her to sit down, but when she won't, he just comes out with it. She may have Hodgkin's disease. Clip 15.
Now, I'd like you to come down to the hospital as soon as possible to run some more tests. There's also a specialist there on staff I'd like you to meet.
What are you up to now? Let's think. What would you gain from making believe that I had cancer?
Nothing, all right? I just want to help you.
Oh, come on. I am not falling for this. Just leave me alone.
You know, anger and denial are normal reactions.
Don't patronize me, Michael. And maybe if you got your MD from a real college instead of off a matchbook, you'd know what you were talking about.
I went to Northwestern, Amanda. I graduated near the top of my class.
Congratulations. You're a liar and pretentious. Now get out of here.
Now listen to me.
Get out of here.
You need medical care.
Get out now.
All right.
Now.
Okay, relax. Will you relax? All right. All right. I'll call you later.
Don't. I never want to hear from you again.
But after he leaves, she is shook.
Yeah, that scene really went somewhere that it didn't have to go, because it's a soap opera. Like, we know they're not going to kill her off.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, that was some Emmy bait screaming, and it worked for me. Sometimes that actors on the show are, like, way too good for this material.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's Billy.
Yeah, it's true, because this gets to the level of like, it's Michael, this is just another example of his fuckery, and I don't understand what his game is right now. But there's right. also the edge in her screaming of like, no, it's true, and I'm super scared now.
Yeah.
Finally, our A plot, is Sydney to blame for a crime wave at the complex? Spoiler, no. Well, indirectly, yes. Jake brings the paper to Joe, who says she was actually going to cancel it since it's more proof that the world sucks. I guess she has cause for a dark mood, given the whole handing off a baby to the strangers who are going to raise him thing. But she's also very chirpy in her delivery, which is a weird choice. Not for the last time in the episode.
No, not for the last time. Like, why Real remind weird. Us of it if you don't feel that your actor can bring the tone? Like, yeah. just talk about put it in the past. Like, this, that storyline was maybe a mistake. Mm-hmm. To, like, get to step in. Anyway.
Yeah, agree. Jake has been thinking about everything they went through, and he thinks their ordeal has reignited their connection. And Joe smiles tightly and takes a lot of words to say she doesn't agree. She has to grieve her motherhood and figure out how to forgive herself. Jake intensely tells her she has nothing to forgive herself for, but she's not ready to hear it and needs time on her own. Over to the Movementarian office, or whatever the hell, in a modest cottage where Ricky and Sydney are stuffing envelopes with flyers that Sydney reads aloud. It's the usual bullshit about taking control of your destiny, blah, blah, blah. She doesn't seem totally convinced yet, but Ricky tells her that the abbaticians or whatever are the only people that she's ever known, including her family, who weren't trying to screw her over. And Sydney knows what that's like. And then Martin himself appears to buck up the troops and thank Sydney personally for her work. You can tell that she's still a little guarded, so he sits down to lock her in his tractor beam gaze and make sure that she really knows he's so glad that she's there. And she repeats what she said about being a victim. And Martin confirms what Ricky said. Everyone in this house is honest. And when he leaves, Sydney tells Ricky that everyone does seem nice. Well, that's how they get you.
Mm-hmm.
And at Shooters that night, Sydney enthuses to a totally uninterested Jake about her new cult. Jake can't believe that she blew off an income-generating lunch shift for this bullshit, but she wanted to help her friends. And Jake would like them, too. He'd fit right in. He thinks that she should watch out for her new pals, and she thinks that if he would just come to one meeting, it might help them understand each other better and maybe figure out a way to find their way back to each other. And he ignores that, asking her to open for lunch the next day, so she repeats her hope about their reunion, and he firmly tells her they're just good friends. Enter Joe, complaining. Someone put sugar in her gas tank, and her motorcycle almost blew up on the freeway. Jake is upset that the original engine is ruined, but Sydney isn't, muttering on her way out that finally someone's getting what she deserves. And that night, Sydney recaps this moment, leave it to the professionals, to Ricky, when they're both in their going out clothes, going out, whining that Joe is always usurping Sydney with all her constant emergencies. And Ricky says this, clip 16.
See? It's like Martin says. People use events to get false power over others. It's so phony. People need to learn how to take responsibility for their own lives.
That's for sure. All I know is tonight I'm taking you to a seriously kicking club. We're going to shake all this off and get into so much trouble.
A seriously kicking club.
Oh, kicking. Should bring it back.
Yeah. And wench. Taking a wench to a kicking club.
Yeah. Hold on to your butts.
Don't get knocked on your can. When they pass Jane and her weird vest that we hated the last time, and that certainly did not need to come back, Jane stops Sydney and says that Ricky's wearing Jane's dress, which Sydney told her last week she was going to return. Sydney parrots some Martin speak at her, but Jane is like, I don't know what that means. I just want my dress back. And Ricky obviously hears all this and tries to win by just pulling it over her head in the middle of the courtyard and throwing it at Jane, and then saying this, clip 17.
Shocked, aren't you? Shocked that someone has the courage to sacrifice for a friend when they're being humiliated by their so-called sister. Come on. I think we can find something else to wear. Sydney doesn't need someone like you in her life anymore. She's got a real family now.
Like, what is the sacrifice? Getting naked in public? This does not seem like it's a big deal to you at all, ma'am.
Yeah. Like, also, given that it's a line delivered by Tracy Lords, like...
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are mitigating circumstances to that story, but it's also like,
yeah.
Oh, God, like, now that everybody except Sydney is real clear that this is a cult, can we... get to the cult works factory, please.
Seriously. Sadly, not yet.
No.
But during this, Sydney is like fucking giddy while Jane reacts like this is not the first time Sydney's done something exactly like this, because it's not. So then Allison brings Meredith to the studio, and while Meredith loves Jane's designs, she worries that they're too sexy for her, which Jane and Allison both scoff at. And, she's bringing out the new line with a bunch of samples, and then she pulls them off the rack and she's like, oh no, they've been all torn up, but like, we see so little of them, it's impossible to tell what's wrong with them, but okay, sure. But who would do this? Jane is very upset, but then seems to have an idea of who the culprit could be. So we cut to Ricky proselytizing still or again to Sydney in their apartment. And then Jane stomps in to yell at Sydney about the horrible damage that she did. Sydney has no idea what Jane is talking about. Jane demands the studio key back and says she hates Sydney. And when she's gone, Ricky says it's like she told Sydney, the weak blame the strong. And like Martin says, Sydney should just walk on by. And Sydney gets it now. And the next day, Joe runs into Jane in the courtyard and asks how she's doing. She heard about the samples. And Jane tells her it was Sydney, and Joe can't believe it, but then she remembers how smug Sydney was about her motorcycle, which Jane has parked inside the gate. So they put two and two together and, you know, come up with five and realize that Sydney seems to be taking revenge on everyone she considers an enemy. And also Jane snitched on her to her probation officer already, which, like, on very circumstantial evidence, but not surprising.
Mm.
So when Joe comes home later, she finds her apartment door already open and yells out to ask who's there before entering. No one is, but before long, she sees her cameras are gone and starts cursing out Sydney. Over to Shooters, where Sydney's working a shift, bringing a plate to Ricky, who tries to get her to hang out with her as though she's not also a restaurant server, but it works. And Joe finds Sydney sitting down when she storms in and accuses her. Sydney, once again, has no idea what she's talking about and cares even less about this allegation than she did about Jane's. So Joe yanks her off her stool and growls that she's messing with Joe's living. And Ricky and her very, very shiny crushed velvet slip dress over a baby tee, because it's 1995, get up to intervene. And then Jake comes out from the back to break it up. And Joe is like fully hysterical, saying that Sydney stole all her cameras and she has to work that night. And Jake sends Sydney home early to try to defuse the situation as though Ricky is not also there to make it worse. Clip 18.
Why are you blaming Sid? Joe started it.
You, I don't know. And this is none of your business.
Yeah, but she's my friend and she's right. You are blaming me again.
Yeah, well, true. Sad, but
I mean,
true.
That's Sydney's lot in life on the show.
Yeah.
Is just to put herself in situations where she's not going to be believed.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually the show putting her in situations where she's not going to be believed. So,
yeah,
poor Sydney.
Poor Sydney, indeed.
And it's obvious that Chris did all this anyway.
So then Ricky gets up in the middle of the night, takes Sydney's keys off the mantle, lets herself in at Shooters, opens the register, which is empty, and then just picks up a bar stool, smashes all the glass behind the bar, takes a pool cue, and just starts, like, wrecking up the place. Wrecks the pinball machine, wrecks the felt on the pool table. I know. Something for each of us. You're upset about the pool table. I was sad about the pinball machine. It's like, really,
yeah.
A lot of expensive damage here.
Mm-hmm.
And then
she just takes out a whole shelf of brown liquor, too. I wasn't happy about that. I don't mind telling you.
Yeah, it's true. And then in the end, stands there just trembling in the midst of all the wreckage. And the next day we see her at Martin's, the cottage, the interior of which might, by the way, just be Dylan's house with different curtains. You can see this in the visual aids and make a judgment for yourself.
Once I saw it, I couldn't unsee it. I think you're totally right.
Yep. So she unloads her haul, including all of the cameras. He's impressed and exposits that they'll scrape off the serial numbers and sell them because they need the cash. And so then they come out to a bustling meeting full of people, including Sydney, who's tense about getting to her shift at Shooters on time. But the reason for the meeting is to welcome Sydney into the fold officially. And everyone, you know, congratulates her and surrounds her with love, blah, blah, blah. And at Shooters, where Jake, Joe, and Jane are all cleaning up, everyone's now fully convinced that Sydney's behind this recent rash of crimes, and Jane has been in touch with her parole officer again, but he's out of town. And Sydney unfortunately walks in just then and is aghast at the damage. Clip 19.
Oh my God, what happened? What? What's going on?
Sydney, I can't believe you have the gall to show up here.
What do you mean? I work here.
Not anymore, you don't.
Wait a minute. You can't actually think that I had something to do with this.
You obviously need a lot of help. More than I ever realized.
These two told you that I did this, and you believe them over me? You know they hate me, Jake.
Nobody hates you, Sydney. We're just tired of you striking out at us.
I'll show you striking out.
Sydney, stop it. You've caused enough damage. No, I've called your probation officer. I think it's time that you faced up to things.
I'm so sick of being hurt by you. All of you.
Poor Sydney.
Yeah. You know what? You know what's weird, too? And it just sort of occurred to me just now listening to this clip. Like, she's a pretty bad liar. Like, Laura Layton is a good actor, but Sydney is not at all.
Yes.
And the fact that she does really get blamed, like she is pathetic and makes a lot of bad choices, I think, because she is needy and borderline, maybe.
Yeah.
Not a doctor. But she, like, there's no reason not to take her reactions as genuine.
Yeah.
Generally, because she's a terrible and very obvious liar. Like, I know it's TV and sometimes they have to believe her even when it's obvious to us, but
yes.
I don't know. Like, after a while, you just get a little tired of the show beating up on her all the time, or I do.
Mm-hmm. And, like, just logically, why would she return to the scene of the crime? You know?
Yeah.
Like, if she were trying to get revenge, why would she come back there and try to work? You know? Like,
yeah.
Think it through, guys.
Yeah, really.
Anyway, that's it for this episode, so let us close out by naming our MVP. She's a terrible person, but I'm going to say Ricky because she had a plan and she followed it through to perfection. She needed to get money for the group and she needed to isolate Sydney from her loved ones, and she did both.
Yeah, I was tempted to say Michael because the ink blot line and the... I went to Northwestern was like, yeah. he just really, that was funny. Good school. Well done.
Mm-hmm.
But like, as always happens on TV, this medical doctor who was a resident at a hospital, like someone faints and he shakes her face.
Yeah.
Why do they always do that? Yep. You noted that in the visual aids. And it's like, yeah, it like stabilized the cervical spine. Hello, there's equipment for that. You went to med school, allegedly. Yeah.
A good
so,
one.
I can't really give it to Michael. So I'm going to agree with you and go with Ricky.
All right. Least valuable player. Allison, be more helpful to your quite troubled sister. Give her better advice.
Yeah. Also, stop acting shocked when Amanda's.
Yeah.
How long have you worked there? Come on.
Yeah, just quit. Get another job.
Seriously.
How much more obvious could she be that this is what she wants you to do? Just do it. It's not the only advertising agency in town. And like the recession is on its way to being over.
Yeah, it's true. Next time on Again With This, Matt's love non-life has some arresting developments. Sydney is deemed a suppressive person and Amanda stands up to cancer. You may need an aggressive experimental treatment for your cornea after you check out our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode of Again With This at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book, beautifully illustrated by Julie Kane, so browse on over there today. Follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you a ton of extra content. I'm library and cosplayer Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Operation Roar, Shock, and Awe, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is OT3DTC. Talk to you next time. Ooh.
What?